This is the Graceful Atheist Podcast. Welcome, welcome, welcome to the Graceful Atheist Podcast. My name is David, and I am trying to be the Graceful Atheist. As usual, please rate and review the podcast on the Apple Podcast Store or podchaser.com, and subscribe to the podcast wherever you are listening. Special thanks to Mike T for editing today's episode. On to today's show. A quick note about the audio quality in today's episode. Sometimes when my guests don't have a microphone or a headset, we get some reverb, so we're having a little bit of that. But the cute thing is that Monique's dog Pugsley was in the room with her and snoring away, so you can hear Pugsley snoring and a bit of reverb. So I apologize, but Mike has done the best he can do to make it sound as good as it can. But Monique's story is so amazing, it is absolutely worth it. My guest today is Monique. Monique has a difficult story to tell, and I will put a content warning here about domestic violence and spiritual abuse. But Monique's story is a hopeful one of overcoming. Monique had a very cultural Christian upbringing, but then became very serious when her boyfriend's family made it clear that in order for her to continue her relationship with him, that she would have to become a Christian. She does that. She gets married and has kids, and some of the psychological abuse begins. More than that, there is a strong element of spiritual abuse where her ex-husband equated himself with the voice of God. Monique found herself trapped and unable to respond to him. She talks about making a very detailed plan of leaving, of having divorce papers and a restraining order happen nearly simultaneously. She is not a victim, she is a survivor, and you can hear in her voice now the freedom and the peace that she experienced this side of deconversion. Without further ado, here's Monique to tell her own story. Monique, welcome to the Graceful Atheist Podcast.
Hi, David. Thank you so much for having me on today.
Well, and thank you for reaching out. You have quite a compelling story, quite a difficult story to tell, but and it spans over a large period of time. So I want to hear what it was like. It sounds like you weren't a Christian until you were a teenager. So what was your early childhood family like?
Sure. So my early childhood life was pretty basic. Grew up in the 70s. We went to church probably a handful of times. It was really important to my mom for some reason for me to be baptized when I was 9 in the Methodist church, kind of out of the blue. So we went through those paces. The preacher or reverend or whatever came over and visited with me about God. And, you know, I just kind of was like, okay, sounds good. And but we didn't really attend church per se. My mom did want me to watch the Ten Commandments, oddly enough, each Easter. And I think that was kind of her way of making sure I had a little bit of God in my life. Neither of my parents were really practicing any religion per se. So we just kind of went along. It was just a really basic childhood until I became a teenager.
Yeah, that's actually really similar to my story. Everyone in my family, quote unquote, believed in God, but they barely ever talked about him.
So. Right.
So as a child, I was really curious. I was like, what do you mean you believe? Like, what is this God?
So. Well, it did, you know, just that you said that, it makes me think of when I was really little, I was probably in first or second grade, and we would do those things in class then where you would all put your head on the desk and they turn the lights out and you would just kind of chill for like 15 minutes. And I remember looking around the classroom thinking, what are we doing here? Like, what is this world we're living in? It was such a deep thought for a little girl. And I remember it like it was yesterday. And it's a very strange moment that I do recall vividly.
So then in your high school years, you start to have some exposure, and that it centers around a relationship you had.
Right. Yes, I met my now ex-husband, but we were teenagers at the time. We began dating. I didn't know it until I started to meet his family, because in school he was very, I guess you would call, quote unquote, secular. Then when I got around his family, I discovered quickly that they were very conservative, Baptists, Southern Baptists. So that slowly became our norm. And I knew that for me to be in a relationship with him, I had to conform to their directives, really, which meant, absolutely no cussing. I didn't really cuss for the most part, but you can even slip up. No, very little makeup, no dancing. Dancing was huge, and I love to dance. So, I mean, secular music went out the door. Everything became church and more church, if you will. And it happened over the course of probably a year or two, even to the point where my family was concerned about me because I was always at church. I was always at his family's house, and I did not really have a relationship with my family.
Wow.
Yeah.
And this is a dating relationship at the time, but that his family had that much influence on you.
Absolutely. And since my family were not saved, air quotations,
Yeah.
it was just, you just don't spend time with them. And, I remember earlier, oh, I don't know, I was probably 18 or 19, and my oldest brother, who's now passed away, it was discovered that he had stomach cancer.
Oh, man.
Yeah, I was completely, he's 12 years older than me. I was completely floored by that. And I went to the church. I thought, hey, no problem. I'm going to go to church and I'm going to pray for you. And I went up to, during invitation, at Southern Baptist. So it's the whole thing at the end of the church service where you all go up and pray and do whatever you need to do. And I went over to our actual pastor and I said, can you please pray for my brother? He has cancer. And he, it, these words just resonate in my mind. He said, well, let me ask you, is he saved? And I thought, oh my God. I said, I don't think so. And he said, well, what we have to do is pray for his salvation before we can pray for his cancer to be
Oh,
healed.
man.
And I don't know what that just pulled the rug out from under me. And I thought, okay. And it was just a very jarring moment. So we prayed for his salvation. And a couple years later, he ended up passing. But it was that kind of, gosh. I thought, man, I don't know how any of this works. And it broke my heart, to be honest.
Man, I can't imagine, you're grieving and in fear for your brother's life, and instead of getting some compassion. I know I probably have told this story a few times, but my mom, when she got to church, when we finally started to actually go to church together, people would ask her about her parents. Are your parents saved? And it was the flippancy with which that question was asked that just drove her nuts, because it's disrespectful. And if the answer happens to be no, it's terrifying.
It is terrifying.
Yeah.
It is flippant, but that's exactly the word to describe that.
So you're conforming to this dating relationships, the family's expectations, including letting go of things that you love, like dancing and secular music. And so what happens next?
So we end up getting married. I quit
Okay.
college. Yeah, I went ahead and got married at 21, which is ridiculous looking back at it. But I thought I knew everything, and we ended up having children. As the years went by, the abuse began, and it was more emotional, spiritual, psychologically. Basically telling me what I could do, where I could go, who I could see, a little bit of physical. The physical really came later. But we had children and we began indoctrinating our children. And I went along with it because I truly thought it was the right thing to do. And I didn't think of it as indoctrination at the time, but the few things that stand out to me, David, are all of the talk about homosexuality.
Yeah.
And that came out because When I would go get my hair done, when I was allowed to get my hair done, the gentleman I saw happened to be gay. And that meant nothing to me then, and it means nothing to me now. But once my then husband and his family found out about this, they set me down and told me, God put this gentleman in your life to lead him to Christ. So you need to witness to him whenever you're around him. And I thought, and I was a horrible Baptist. Let me tell you, I was not good at witnessing. I love to help people, but I couldn't just go up to somebody and let's talk about your personal life.
Yeah.
And so I sure never did that. I mean, I got my hair cut and we visited and had a lovely time and I came home. And, but just that the audacity of here's your directive. That was horrible. Horrible to me. And to this day, it disgusts me.
Yeah, I think part of it is that anyone who isn't a part of the church is seen as less than human. And then on top of that, with the purity culture issues, someone who is homosexual is even less than that. And so, and that is communicated in the way that they talk about someone outside of the church.
Absolutely. And when you brought up purity culture, it made me think of another episode that happened before we were married, really early in our relationship, if I can just go backwards for a second.
Yeah.
If you can hear my pug snoring, I apologize. to move her, but she wants to be right by me.
You just need to tell us her name. That's all.
Her name is Pugsley.
Pugsley. Okay. Yeah. Very good.
We adopted her and that was her name. Yeah. But when we were dating, it was real early into our relationship and he discovered that I was not a virgin. And he, which is very personal, and but I don't mind telling my story. My story is my story.
Okay.
And he told me he was disgusted with me when he found this out.
Wow.
And he was disgusted. And he said, I can't believe that you've already done this. And he's ready to do it with me.
Yeah.
But, you know, but how dare I, you know?
Right.
And okay. I couldn't have the forethought to know he was going to come in my life, you know, down the road, but whatever.
Yeah.
And he began calling me sloppy seconds.
Oh, man.
And at the time, you know, it's so strange how you go through your life and you remember things and you remember feeling certain ways. And that hearing those words about me was, it broke my heart. And I thought, but you know what it did to me is it broke me down. Yeah. And I didn't get angry. Now I'm angry, but I wasn't angry then. I was embarrassed and I was ashamed.
Right.
He completely knew how to hurt me and he did it over and over again.
Yeah. Even as you were describing the abuse, I don't want to put a judgment on this, but it's like you were almost apologizing for it not being much about physical, but that psychological abuse is devastating. That
right.
Must be just soul crushing.
Absolutely soul crushing. Yes. And to think of it now, I'm actually in therapy. Thank goodness. In fact, later today, I have an appointment with my psychiatrist,
okay.
But I'm trying to heal from all of this. I really am trying to heal because I want to live my best life.
Well, I'm really glad to hear that. Again, we're very pro therapy here. So, and some of these early traumas,
absolutely,
especially things that happened to you, you know, in your teenage years can affect you as an adult for decades.
Oh yeah, completely.
I feel like I threw you off your game here. So you guys were married. There was a lot of psychological abuse. And what happened next?
So he began preaching. He told me that as a child, Jesus came into his room as a man and appeared in his room. And he sat on the floor and he invited him to come sit on his lap. And he told him he was going to preach. He shared this with me when we were probably, you know, 6 years into our marriage. So,
oh, wow.
Yeah. So we have the kids. Now this revelation's here and he starts preaching. So he started doing little sermons at our church where they needed somebody to preach. And he actually did a pretty good job of it. He was dyslexic. And when he preached, he was actually very good at it and comfortable. So that took a life of its own, and a very scary moment happened when it was an early, early Thanksgiving morning, and I can tell this story pretty quickly. It lasted hours, but what happened was he woke me out of a dead sleep. Children are sleeping in their room. Like I said, it's Thanksgiving morning, probably 3 in the morning.
Wow.
Very scary. And he said, wake up, wake up. Can you get the kids? Get them together. Get them in the car. We have to get out of here right away. And of course, I said, what's going on? And he said, it's not for you to ask. I mean, he was very firm.
Wow.
So I got the children out of their beds. Yeah. And they were little. And I got them in the car with their blankets. And, you know, they're saying, Mama, what's going on? I said, I don't know, guys, but let's just get in the car and see what's going on. And, you know, we're going to be okay. I'm trying to be the mom to these children. Yeah. And I'm also terrified. Get in the car. We drive out of town. We're on the outskirts of town, and he won't talk to me. He's just intent, white knuckling the steering wheel all the way out of town. And I said, what is happening? And he said, you just look out the side mirror and watch the city as we drive away. And I said, why? You know, why? Well, he wasn't talking to me. He was angry, angry. We get outside of town, and he pulls off on the side of the road, and he says, we're just going to sit here and wait. And I was, to say I was terrified isn't even, that's an understatement. He finally shared with me that God came to him and told him to get his family out of the town, out of our town, immediately, that he was going to destroy it. And I said, that didn't happen.
Right.
That didn't happen. And he said, you don't know, you have little faith. And he just tore me up with words.
Yeah.
And I don't know anything. I don't have a relationship with God like he does. How dare I question him? How dare I question God? So we sit there. I felt like all the blood just was rushing out of my head and my face. I felt like I was flushed. I felt like this is a dream.
Yeah.
And he said, okay, well, God said we passed the test. We left the city per his direction, and he has favor with us. He's found favor with us. It's good. We can go back now. And we went back into town, and my husband directed me to not tell anybody about this event, that it was between us and God, and I kept it quiet until after we divorced.
Wow. I mean, you know, I can... You know, that anger that he was expressing is I'm sure embarrassment that he was wrong, right? He was just dead wrong.
Right. It was like I couldn't even, like, if that were to happen to me today,
yes,
my reaction would be, I didn't have a voice, David, let me tell you. I had no voice. I had no opinion. I was not argumentative. I could not have critical thinking, you know? And, so I was just in it.
Yeah.
One of my coworkers said, you were going along to get along. And that is exactly what I was doing. So that was kind of the beginning of the end. I think I didn't know it at the time. But when he would preach, he would ask me, you know, how was that sermon? And I would, you know, have to review it. And, you know, I always had to say how amazing it was. Yeah. And then this one day he preached on Isaac and Abraham.
Okay.
And I hate that story. I hate it with every fiber of my being as a mom.
Yeah.
And, you know, he preached on it, and we came back home, and, you know, he asked me my review, and I said, I had some guts all of a sudden, and I said I hated it.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. I can't believe I did that looking back.
Good for you. Yeah.
And, you know, his eyes got wide as saucers, and he said, what do you mean? And, you know, we had an argument because I was of little faith, and, you know, I didn't know. I was dumb. He was smart. God is great. It was a great thing. It's a great story. And I said, no, I hate it. I don't care what you say. I hate it. So that was me getting a little bit of strength.
Yeah.
And it took probably after that, I would say it was about 2 years until the final thing that happened. And I was just going through my life, doing the best I could, taking care of my kids, working, just trying to stay under the radar. And then somebody came into my life and made me kind of look at everything differently. And I'm ashamed to say that I had an affair, and I don't condone it. I never, ever, ever would have dreamt that I would have done that. That was not me. That was the polar opposite of me.
Right.
And this man came into my life. I knew him as a child, and we began talking, and well, you know what happens. And then my now ex-husband found out about it, and
Okay.
then the death threat started happening. And you know, he would tell me, if we were in the Old Testament, I would be able to stone you to death, and you would deserve it. And he, you know, showed me a gun. He would always show me a gun, and he would follow me, and he would come to my work and stalk me. And it was terrifying. And it took about probably 6 months, and I left him. The last straw was he actually tried to choke me, and he put his arm on my neck. And I remembered looking up at our ceiling fan, thinking, if I don't die, I have to leave him now. So I made arrangements, and I was able to secure an apartment secretly, quietly, privately, and I began gathering all the things I would need. And I had to be very stealthy. I had to be very calculating, and I ended up able to get my divorce decree delivered right after he received my restraining order. So I had it all very, very set up methodically. And actually, this all had to happen for me to leave him, David. And at the time, I was ashamed, I was embarrassed, I was. It broke my heart that I hurt him, because I never wanted to hurt him. I ended up hurting my children because I hurt their father. And we got divorced. We shared custody for a couple of years, and we made the most of it. It was awkward, absolutely awkward. But then one day, my children told me they wanted to live with their dad. My two oldest told me they wanted to live with him. He had remarried. And what they meant by that was they wanted to only live with him and not have me in their life at all. So it's been 13 years. In August, it was 13 years that they left.
I'm so
And that was
sorry.
my two daughters and my son. Yeah, thank you. It was, and to this day is the hardest thing I've ever endured, because he has successfully brainwashed them into thinking that I am, you know, the spawn of Satan, and they can't be around me. And so, you know, that was horrible, absolutely horrible. But you know, I have to keep on going. I have to keep working. I have to keep taking care of myself. So I had some bad days in there, really, really, really bad days.
I can imagine, yeah.
But I tried to stay strong. I think it was 7 years in, out of the blue, I got a call from my son. And he left. When they left, he was 10, and now he's 17. And let me remind you, the courts did not allow me to have custody of my kids because they had a lawyer and I didn't.
Oh, wow.
I completely lost everything. But my son came back to me, and this part I didn't put in my story, so you don't know this part.
Okay.
I had to get permission from my son on this. He left. He reached out to me because he was gay and is gay.
Okay.
And once that became known to his father and that whole family, he was then put on display
Oh,
and
man.
told, you know, they had called a family meeting. To, and that's what they like to do. You know, hey, we'll call him Kai. Kai has something to tell everybody, and it's, you know, this very personal thing. And you know, it's the whole thing. He's defective. God's going to judge him. And so he couldn't take it anymore. And bless his heart, he reached out to me and he told me, "I'm gay, Mom." And I said, "I don't care. I could care less." To me, even, yeah. You know, like I told you about my hairdresser, I don't care. That means nothing to me. That's the most insignificant piece of a person.
Do you know how important that moment must have been for your son?
Oh.
Like for you to just say, I love you no matter what, you know, like that would have been an incredible moment.
Yeah, exactly. And you know, he didn't know what he was getting with me.
Yeah.
Because he had been told all these lies about how horrible I was. So he took a huge chance contacting me. And we've talked, we both kind of gone through our deconstruction together. He's an amazing person and I adore him. He's 23 now and he's the light of my life. And so we have a great relationship. And, you know, I did marry the gentleman I had the affair with. We've been married and together for quite a while.
Yeah.
And he is my best friend and he and my son have bonded. I mean, they bonded at the very moment they met.
Yeah.
And he's compassionate. He's loving. And so that's been a huge part of our journey together.
Monique, I'm struck by the spiritual abuse part of the marital abuse in that I think many women, and thank you, first of all, for telling that story, because I think people who are in those kinds of abusive relationships think they can't get out. And you've been very honest about how difficult it was, how much planning and execution it took, but that it is in fact possible. It can be done. So thank you for sharing that. But I'm struck by this aspect of not only is it the abusive power dynamic, but on top of that is this spiritual abuse of God told me, and you're wrong because you aren't listening to God. Maybe speak to a little bit about how you could separate out from that and recognize that that wasn't God judging you, that that was the abuser.
Well, that didn't happen right away. I mean, when I was in it, I was completely overcome by fear. Fear was huge. My whole life from 18 to, you know, 38. Fear, hell, just the judgment. And I could not see out of that until, I mean, probably like 4 years ago. I couldn't see out of it.
Okay.
So now looking back, I can say that, oh my goodness, it was all spiritual abuse. It was all manipulation and indoctrination. But when you're in it, you don't know it. It's so strange. It's like you have to leave, get on the other side. I liken it to, you know, someone who has Vaseline on their eyes and you look out and it's hazy and it's you know, goopy and weird. And then you get it off and then it's like, oh, I can see, I can see. And it's really neat. And it's so funny. I brought this with me. I don't know if you can even see my video, but I brought my little deconstruction notebook.
Okay.
I have it with me everywhere I go. And when something kind of doesn't sound right, I make a note of it and I research it when I have time. And, you know, I begin my deconversion deconstruction, I guess, first with deconversion therapy podcast with Bonnie and Karen.
Yeah.
And I saw them on TikTok, or I saw Karen on TikTok, and then I started listening to their podcast, and that's how I found you when you interviewed Karen.
Yeah.
And I thought, oh my goodness, this is not alone. I'm not alone. There's other people, and it's so interesting to unlearn what you've learned.
Oh, that's amazing. I love that. Just again, the major reason that I do the podcast is that feeling of recognition, like, oh, you're telling my story. I'm not alone. Yeah.
And you do tell my story. You know, you found Christianity at a later age in your teenage years.
Yeah.
And you know, a lot of what you say hits home to me. And I think there's so much to be to be gained in their strength in numbers. And we're not alone. You know, that's, I think, the biggest lie is a person feels alone in their journey. And that's what I try to tell folks when they are worried about something. I say, you're not alone. I'm here. I may not be able to help you, but I am here with you. Yeah. And I think that's the biggest part of helping each other through this or whatever that someone's going through. Yeah.
Yeah, that's amazing. Just one other thing from the email that you sent me, you've hinted at this, but you talked about kind of as the layers fell off, you felt a sense of overwhelming peace. The irony there being that Christianity talks about a peace beyond understanding. Sarah, you want to talk about how you feel today?
Yeah. Well, the part that really speaks to me is truth. Truth is the most important thing. And I know that, you know, some people say, well, that's subjective, but it's really not. If you say 2 + 2 = 4, it will always be 4. You can tell me it's 5 and it will never be 5. It will always be 4. Hmm. So I try to really look at things. You know, I tell my son the other day, I'm 52, and I thought, I really, really hate that I'm this late in my life and I'm so interested in learning now. I want more years of good mind power, everything firing together so I can understand it. But the peace is just coming from the truth. And the more, this got me hung up early on, but everyone just kind of poo-pooed it. But, you know, in the very first book of Genesis there, when it's talking about Adam and Eve, and I couldn't really get around that. And then it says, you know, Cain and Abel and their story, which I have lots of frustration about that as well. Yes,
yeah.
Then it says, you know, Cain went to the town next door, the city of Nod. And I thought, where did these people come from?
Yes.
all we've heard about is Adam and Eve and Cain and Abel. Now there's a whole other town.
Yeah.
And I remembered asking early on, what does that mean? And, you know, these church people would tell me, well, that's just God. We don't know the ways of God. We don't question it. But I did think that's odd. And I put it away, that cognitive dissonance just puts it away.
Yeah.
And now I don't put anything away. I bring everything out to the open. And I'm myself. I am me with everybody. And, you know, my daughter, my middle daughter, came to me last year during COVID. And I hadn't seen her in, 12 years. Mm. And she reached out to me out of the blue. And we were pen pals for about 4 months, getting to know each other again. And it was lovely. Okay. It was very sweet. She's Christian, obviously. She's knee deep in it with her dad.
Okay.
And she has a little girl and her husband. And we ended up meeting, and it was lovely. We were reconnecting. She met my husband. It was lovely. And our first time we had them over for dinner, I told them, we were sitting around the table, and I said, guys, I don't pray for my food. You are more than welcome to, but I just want you to know I don't.
Right.
And they said, that's fine. That's okay. And they started eating. So I thought, okay, this is good. And then we had them over again, and I kind of had a house full of people. We had other family here and cousins and whatnot. And I said, hey, we were getting ready to eat. And I said, hey, can everybody come, gather around here? Because all I wanted to do, all I wanted to do was tell them I love them and thank you for being here today.
Yes.
And my son, who's sarcastic like me, we kind of have a very similar personality. Yeah. He says, Mom, are you going to make us pray?
Right.
And I said, no, son, I think I'm okay. And we kind of laughed like you and I did just now.
Yeah.
And that interaction pushed my daughter completely away from me. And she told me, could not have me in her life, and she could not have her daughter around me.
Oh, wow.
And that broke me. That was just last year, super, super fresh pain. And that broke me down pretty badly. I'm recovering from that.
Yeah.
And just to go back to what you asked me, David, is the peace. I'm going back to the peace of the truth and who I am. And I'm not going to conform like I did way back when I was 18. I will not conform to meet someone else's standards. I am who I am. And that's, even though that's her brainwashing on her side, and she's going
Right.
to have to work through that. So, yeah, it's an interesting journey.
I talk every once in a while about needing to be the bigger person in relationships, but I want to make it clear that you have absolutely done that, and you cannot be responsible for the other person's reactions. If a mild, kind ribbing joke like that is going to offend a person, that there's you have no control over that.
Thank you for saying that. That I needed to hear that, and that's fantastic. And that's what I need to try to always remind myself.
You've shown love, you've shown grace to her, and it's her, the ball's in her court. She needs to respond. Just as a last wrap up thing, I think it's interesting you've mentioned the Cain and Abel and Adam and Eve, and then also Abraham and Isaac. I find like almost, I don't want to say everyone, but like many, many deconverts, people who are on this side of faith, find, especially parents, find that Abraham and Isaac story just horrifying.
Yeah.
And it is amazing to me today, and I didn't see it as clearly at the time, that is such an important story within the Christian
Yes.
context, because it is a terrible story about, someone being willing to kill their own child, and that it just absolutely is insane.
I can't wrap my head around that at all. And one thing I didn't mention to you, and another part of your story that resonates with me, David, is that my husband is a Christian. Who my current husband, my husband in life, he just got baptized actually about 2 months ago. As a Greek Orthodox. Isn't that interesting?
Yeah, that's definitely interesting.
Yeah, very interesting. And he goes to the church. It's over by his work. He goes every now and then. But the beauty of it is that he lets me be me, and he doesn't force anything on me. He'll watch, like the, what do you call it, like the live stream sometimes, and he'll have it on the TV, and I'll be looking at, TikTok on my phone. And we have a very, we make it work. He would prefer me to believe like he does. I know. I heard your show with your wife. I know that he would prefer I do. And when I do say snarky little things, and I do so, do that sometimes, I try to hold back. I do try to hold back.
I know.
It's something that we're working through, and we will continue to work through it. But he's lovely, and I am so thankful for him.
Oh, that's amazing. I'm glad to hear that you have mutual respect with each other. So that's
Yes.
great.
So in our home life, we have a lot of peace, a lot of peace.
Monique, so to wrap up, you've mentioned deconversion therapy and this podcast, but are there any other things that you recommend for people who are kind of in the beginning?
Holy Heretics a little bit. I've been listening to that one a little. I started to listen to Jesus and John Wayne. Is that the name of the book? It's audible. And what I really do is I whenever I'm here listening to something, I have to take notes. That's just who I am by nature. So when I listen to your shows, I take notes with your guests, and I learn so much from each show from you and your guests. And I want to just take a moment, if I may, and thank you for the work you do for our community. And you are truly the graceful atheist.
I appreciate that. I will definitely say that it is the guest stories that is the magic, and that someone like you telling your story and being, it's that vulnerability of being truly honest that allows someone else who has had similar circumstances to say, ah, that person has gotten out. I can do it too. And I think that's the amazing thing. So.
Absolutely. And I will. I know this is anonymous right now, but I eventually want to not be anonymous. But Not quite there yet.
No worries. And you can always come back if you want to do more.
Okay.
Please do thank your son for being willing to have his story told. And thank you, Monique, very much for telling your story here.
Thank you. Thank you so much. Have a great day.
Final thoughts on the episode. Wow, that is an incredible story from Monique and heartbreaking to listen to the details. The gaslighting, the spiritual abuse, ultimately some physical abuse, and feeling utterly trapped. Monique is incredibly brave and executed her plan to get out and was able to do so. And you can hear the almost victorious defiance when she talks about not conforming to someone else's standard. There are a number of things that are amazing about Monique's story beyond her bravery. I love that she has a deconstruction journal and she writes things down for future research. That is just absolutely perfect. If we all did that in just our regular lives, I think that would be amazing. I don't know about this topic yet, but I want to learn more. That is amazing. The amount of secular grace that Monique showed for her son. I can think of no better life illustration of what I mean by secular grace than how Monique cared for, loved, and showed respect and dignity for her son. I do want to thank him again for allowing his story to be told. If you're listening, that was brave of you as well. Thank you so much. Not knowing how she would respond, I'm sure was terrifying. And you can imagine the relief that he must have felt when someone whom he loved, that he needed to have that acceptance from, gave it unreservedly. That is secular grace. I really appreciated that Monique talks about the truth being where she gets peace. And as she can explore the truth, she feels more peace. And so that freedom to learn and to grow is incredibly freeing. And I'm excited for her and all the new things that she's going to learn. And continuing with the secular grace theme, Monique talks about how you are not alone, listener. If you are in the middle of deconstruction or if you are in an abusive relationship, you are not alone. There are people out there who have gone through the same things. And there are resources for you to reach out to. But I love the way that Monique said it. You are not alone. I am here. I may not be able to help. I may not be able to help you, but I am here with you. Again, that is such an amazing representation of secular grace. I want to thank Monique for being on the podcast and for sharing such deep vulnerability about such a painful topic. I want to thank her for being a representative of a way out for people who are in abusive relationships to know that that's possible, as well as for the people in spiritually abusive situations where they're being gaslighted and told that they are wrong and that God is speaking through that abusive person. You can get out and you are not alone. Thank you, Monique, for sharing your story with us. For the secular grace thought of the week, I'm not sure I can add more to what Monique has told us in her own story. To just reiterate that you are not alone, that this community is here, that no matter what you've gone through, there are other people who have gone through similar things, and reach out. Don't try to go it alone. That is the hardest way to do it. And that when people are vulnerable with us, like Monique's son was with her, when someone clearly needs acceptance, clearly needs us to just open our arms and say, I love you without judgment, be that person. Show that grace, and that will have an incredible impact on the world. We have lots of things cooking here on the podcast with the team of people that have begun to participate. I'm excited about what is going on with the podcast and the momentum that I am feeling with the people who are participating and helping out. Thank you to all of you who help make the podcast work, and thank you to all the listeners who make this worthwhile. Thank you so much. And until next time, My name is David, and I am trying to be the graceful atheist. Join me and be graceful human beings. Time for the footnotes. The beat is called Waves from Makai Beats. Links will be in the show notes. If you'd like to support the podcast, you can promote it on your social media. You can subscribe to it in your favorite podcast application, and you can rate and review it on podchaser.com. You can also support the podcast by clicking on the affiliate links for books on gracefulatheist.com. If you have podcast production experience and you would like to participate with the podcast, please get in touch with me. Have you gone through a faith transition and do you need to tell your story? Reach out. If you are a creator or work in the deconstruction, deconversion, or secular humanism spaces and would like to be on the podcast, just ask. If you'd like to financially support the podcast, there's links in the show notes. To find me, you can Google Graceful Atheist. You can Google deconversion. You can Google secular grace. You can send me an email, gracefulatheist@gmail.com, or you can check out the website, gracefulatheist.com. My name is David, and I am trying to be the graceful atheist. Join me and be graceful human beings. This has been the Graceful Atheist Podcast.